You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
In the real estate world, everybody talks about when to sell, but we don't talk a whole lot about how to sell right. In this episode of Real Estate Investing, I'm picking up where we left off a couple of weeks ago in talking about exiting investments effectively. And we're going to talk today about how to unlock the highest use value of your asset when you're thinking about selling, and also how to manage your exit before big capital expenditures come for your bottom line. So please stay tuned for this cool episode on how to exit effectively.
Welcome to the Real Escape Investing Podcast, where we guide you to escape the constraints of time, geography, and finance through real estate. And now, here's your host, Terry Schauer.
Hey, real estate fan, and welcome back to Real Escape Investing this week. Today, we're going to be talking about how to effectively exit an asset. And we had another episode on this a couple of weeks ago. So if you didn't have a chance to check that out, you probably want to go and listen to that episode first. But if you've consumed that content already, please listen to this show where we're going to be covering some of the material that I did not get a chance to cover in that initial episode. And actually, interestingly, what happened is that in between that episode and this one, we had our Equity Builders Club networking event, the last one of 2025, and I got a chance to talk about some of the material from the last show and get some feedback from some of the other experienced investors in the room who reminded me that there are some key points to exiting that I did not get a chance to present on and mention in the previous episode. So you get to benefit from some of those conversations in the show today. Before we jump into some of the meat of what we're going to be talking about, I do just want to remind you how to consume this content and kind of what the big picture is behind why I keep recording these shows week after week. And that is to help you, budding investor, mom and pop investor looking to scale, or experienced investor, to make good decisions and to take relevant, concrete, and time-bound action to increase your holdings and have better decisions for profit and peace of mind in the real estate world. So obviously you're already doing a good job by listening to these episodes, but then you can also take that action a little bit further and come and join me at our next Equity Builders Club networking event. We're all wrapped up for 2025, but we're going to have some really cool stuff happening in 2026. And that's going to begin with some goal setting exercises early on in the year to get you all set up for success in 2026. So if you want to learn more about that, you can hop over to the equitybuildersclub.com webpage and you can find our calendar events there on the calendar tab. You can book a ticket for our first event in January by going to the events tab, on which you can use my promo code, so ML5, that's Mindful Landlord, like my book that's available on Amazon, 5 for $5 off. So you can use that promo code to get a discounted ticket for our first event of the year. And then if you want to learn a little bit more about how we can help you strategically to make good decisions and then also scale, you can have a look at the discovery call tab there. You can book a call with me or with one of my associates to look into your specific situation and see how we might help you move forward in your real estate investing journey. While we're on the topic of that, we can just kind of jump back over and begin talking about the smart decision making and good action that you can take when you're coming to the point of selling an asset and exiting something that you've been doing for a while. And so in the previous show, we talked a lot about just the fact of exiting actually makes sense, because I think this is where a lot of mom and pop landlords get tied up, either emotionally involved with their assets or in the mindset of holding something forever until the mortgage goes to zero, and that this is really not how professional real estate investors manage their portfolios and deal with things in the longer term. So we kind of unpacked all of that in the previous episode on when it's time to sell. But now in this episode, we're going to refine that thinking a little bit and talk about two things that perhaps I skipped over a little bit in the first episode and that I felt like I wanted to add in this show. The first one is, once you've made the decision to exit or you can see on the horizon that it's getting to be time to liquidate something, the way that you're going to be sure that you are getting the most value or you're creating the most value or you're going to walk away with the best paycheck for yourself is to ask yourself the question of what the highest and best use of that asset is. So what does this mean in real estate terms? It means that the end user or the buyer for your property, there's going to be an optimal kind of buyer and there's going to be a type of asset that is worth more than others. And that is then the highest use. And so if you can imagine that a building, so let's for argument's sake, just take a residential triplex. That triplex can be sold in a bunch of different ways. It can be sold with three tenants in place as an investment property. It can be sold as undivided condos. So you could sell each floor individually, or you could sell the plex as an owner-occupied triplex, in which case an owner-occupant might want to buy it and perhaps live on the ground floor and have some help paying off their mortgage. So those are the three different ways in which you could sell that asset. And one of them, or perhaps two of them, are going to correspond to that higher use and are going to then fetch the most amount of money when it comes time to sell. This is a story that I kind of, like to tell. Actually, not something that I've done really, but something that I had one of my earlier clients do when he had exactly a triplex of this type that was a fully investor, like an investor quality triplex. And so what this means is that probably all three units will have been rented for some time. And now typically in the Montreal market that we're in, it usually ends up being the ground floor unit that is appealing to homeowners because it means that usually it's attached to the yard and perhaps that unit will be a little bit larger. But now what happens is that when a plex has been run for a long time as an investment grade plex, that ground floor unit is often not up to the standard that owner occupiers would be interested in. So that means that perhaps the furnishings are old, perhaps some of the divisions are not exactly up to today's standards where people prefer to have big open spaces. Or perhaps there's a basement that's like not in the best shape. Either it hasn't been dug out or the floor hasn't been done in concrete. So you sort of can't use it. Or perhaps there's a super dated bathroom or kitchen or something like that. And so it means that it's just difficult for the plex owner occupiers to project themselves into that unit. Just as a general rule of thumb, investors are typically the people who are willing to pay the least amount of money for an asset. If you're able to turn your asset into something that can appeal to an owner-occupant, especially at a time where the single-family home market or principal residence market is a little bit tighter, it means that you're going to be able to sell your asset for top dollar as opposed to selling to someone like yourself who's perhaps got more of an investment mindset. But then when you're looking at going after this clientele, because you're dealing with people who are less experienced, usually they're not able to project themselves very well when it comes to looking at dated kitchens and bathrooms or divisions that aren't sexy or something that is just not owner-occupant quality. And so you can turn off a lot of those more novice buyers by simply having an asset that doesn't look like it's appealing to them. And so if we go back to this friend of mine, well, what happened is that his ground floor tenant ended up leaving. And by the time the ground floor tenant left, like this property was a 100-year-old triplex in Hochelaga-Maisonneuve and had been neglected by a series of investors over time. Actually, I was the property manager on the deal at the time, and we involved a real estate broker who's actually quite talented at seeing this avenue for the highest use. And so he actually came in and recommended that my client, for whom I was managing that triplex, should invest some money. And he ended up investing, this was about 5 years ago, so you have to convert into 2025 dollars. So he ended up investing somewhere between 15 and 20K to like really redo a new bathroom with a jacuzzi and all of that. And then to put in some new kitchen cabinetry. And that ended up really maximizing the value for which he was able to sell that triplex, and also made it cut his sale time down a whole lot, because when an owner occupier can look at a plex and have a little bit of that wow experience, can fall in love with the place, they're going to be more likely to pay top dollar and to also perhaps even overpay vis-a-vis what that asset might be worth in terms of just its income generating potential. You know, when you look at this, there are actually a few different ways of doing this. And I just spent a fair amount of time explaining the plex situation, because what I observe on the market right now is that there is a window of opportunity for people who are looking at doing that. I call it an investment flip. So it's buying an investment grade plex and turning it into something that could be appealing to an owner occupant. And so this isn't like a flip in the sense that you're buying a single family home, gutting it, renovating it, and selling it for more money. But what you're doing is you're changing the use of a property from a purely investment grade asset to something that is appealing to an owner occupant. The fact of converting plexes into undivided condos in Quebec is another version of this. So you have to imagine that this is a bit more risky, because in effect, in order to convert to undivided condos, your building needs to be completely vacant. That obviously ups your carrying cost, because vacating a unit and then holding a property through that conversion process, through the renovations that you inevitably have to do to make all three floors appealing to owner occupants, and then also budgeting in for the sale process, because undivided condos in Quebec, you need to put just about 20% down. And the financing, because it's a little bit more difficult, means that you have a reduced buyer pool. But so if you're able to convert a triplex into three undivided condos, that is probably going to be a higher use, in which a potential buyer is going to be willing to pay more per unit than they would be paying if they were paying simply for investment units. And so this then becomes a way of adding value and changing the buyer profile. Because instead of marketing and selling that triplex to an investor who's looking just at the revenue aspect of it, you're changing buyer profile and looking at someone who is looking for that wow condo experience when they walk in and can actually feel some sort of a connection, because it's going to be their home. And that, in a sense, by doing this, you are creating value. So that's another strategy that I see smaller landlords apply on some of those residential plexes that could be appealing to people who are looking to purchase condos. Then, of course, the other thing that we're seeing more and more is with commercial space, that as retail is kind of having a hard time, and office spaces as well, there's an opportunity in the market to turn some of that commercial space into a residential conversion. Now, with this, you have to be extremely careful for two reasons. The first one is zoning. And from having owned and managed semi-commercial buildings on commercial arteries, for example, St. Catherine East or Wellington are two streets that I'm familiar with, those streets will have specific zoning laws for their ground floors, because they're trying to maintain the commercial character of the street. And so you have to be careful with some of those commercial to residential conversions, just because the city is not always on board with them. So please do your due diligence as far as zoning and as far as what the city's game plan is for an area before diving in on a project like this. But the fact is that this can be somewhere where you can make a good amount of money. Then the next thing that I wanted to talk about, which I felt like I didn't get a chance to expand on as much as I wanted to in the previous episode on selling of assets, is the role that the time horizon for capital expenditures, that needs to be taken into consideration when it comes time to thinking about when it's time to sell. The fact is that a lot of our housing stock, you know, I always am kind of looking at this in terms of the Montreal market, in which I'm really active, is that a lot of our housing stock that was built perhaps in the 50s and all the way up to the 70s, a lot of those assets are coming to a time in their lives where there is major capital expenditure necessary to keep the building functioning properly. What I'm thinking of is that, for example, in terms of plumbing, we have a lot of galvanized piping or cast iron drainage systems that are kind of coming to the end of their useful life. The same can be said of certain kinds of electrical wiring, whether that is the old knob and tube, which is really old, or some of the aluminum wiring that's a little bit older, or perhaps even the foundations that were maybe poured with a lower quality of concrete, or that because there's a lot of water in the soil, some of that foundation concrete has then, with the pressure from, you know, the hydrostatic pressure from the water and then the frost and all of that sort of thing, if there was no French drain or membrane on the outside of that, a lot of those foundations are becoming more porous than we would like and are kind of near the end of their lives. I also haven't included in this the brick and new roof equation, which comes up every now and again, but are sort of easier to see because they're apparent. So any decent building inspection or anyone who's maintaining their buildings, you will have a general sense of what sort of state your brick is in and what sort of state the roof is in. As some of those more high ticket items, those building systems come closer to their end of life, it begins to make sense to factor that into your liquidation decisions, because there will come a time horizon where if you're the one who's holding that asset when those major renovations become due, it might make sense to liquidate that asset in the 5-year time horizon when those systems do have just a tiny bit of life left in them, but where you're not going to be the one left holding the bag to perhaps produce a new foundation or redo all of the brick, because that is the kind of thing that can really explode your budget. And it makes sense on a 25-year time horizon, but if you're thinking in terms of 5-year refinancing terms, sometimes it doesn't make sense to be the one left holding that bag when the music stops and that particular capital expenditure comes due. I would even go so far as to considering this in your purchase decisions, because you're going to have a sense when you're looking at those building reports, kind of how much lifespan those big capital items still have in them. And you're going to, at the time of purchase, even going to be able to go so far as to think, well, what is my ideal hold time horizon for this? Because if I know that, you know, there seems to be some water infiltration in the basement, or the quality of the concrete doesn't look so great, or perhaps the brick looks like at some point it's going to need a little bit of love, well, then you need to build that into your holding time horizon and think, okay, what is my game plan for this building? And you can actually build that in at the time of acquisition, as opposed to having it surprise you when you're 5 years into holding that asset and then you've got to make some decisions. The purpose of this is to really factor that lifetime, the amount of life that those systems have left in them versus the capital expenditure that it's going to take to get them to live for another 25 to 50 years. If you're not planning to hold them for that time period, you might want to think about the time horizon or the optimal moment at which it makes sense to sell those buildings before those particular high budget items become due. And then the next kind of thing to talk about is the repackaging for exit. So obviously, if you're going to be considering converting the use in order to go and get some of that value associated with the highest use of your asset, the repackaging for exit is going to be a bigger chunk, because perhaps you have to do more major renovations like the electrical panels, putting in new kitchens and bathrooms, and that is a bit more high ticket and also a little bit more onerous than doing light renovations like changing paint or basic upgrades or staging and tenant repositioning. There's a cosmetic aspect that you might do to repackage for another investor, but that if you're looking at really converting the use of a place, chances are that that price tag is going to go up and that you need to then evaluate the headache and the investment versus the amount of money that you can make on doing some of that changing of use. The fact with some of those major capital expenditures and the experience that I've had is, you know, very often newer investors will ask me the question, well, okay, my roof, the roof of my building is at the end of its life. What should I do? Should I preventatively change it right before I sell? Or should I leave that for the next person to take on? My advice of that is to declare it, because whatever you declare, the person, it's the convention that then cannot really be negotiated. Its full value cannot be renegotiated off the price when they make an offer and in the due diligence process, because you've mentioned it. And then usually you're not really going to make any more money, there's no advantage to you actually doing that work yourself. So if we take the example of a roof, everybody knows that, you know, a standard investment grade roof, you're looking at something between 25 to 30K to redo that. You could pay that out of pocket before you list the building, But unless the roof is leaking, that's the maximum amount of money someone who wants to buy the building is going to negotiate off the sale price. So you kind of have to evaluate, does it make sense for you to take on the headache of getting the quotes done and managing the renovations and then also paying that, whereas you know that the biggest downside for on a sale process is going to be the negotiation. And it's rare that people are able to manage to negotiate the full value of a renovation in that purchase process. So typically, unless you're worried about scaring away buyers, like the best course of action that I can suggest is to declare whatever systems are at the end of their life, but then perhaps don't do the investment yourself to fix them if you're planning on selling it, because the buyer is going to build that into their financial modeling. Perhaps the ultimate best place to leave this episode is with a few closing thoughts around having, pitching to your audience, right? And this comes to knowing your buyer. The fact is that typically people who are willing to pay top dollar are going to be end users. So if you have an angle to go and sell to someone for whom your product is going to be housing, those are going to be the people willing to pay the most. So the owner-occupied plex or the condo. And then when it comes to investors, you also have to bear in mind that not all investors are equal. Investors who are perhaps newer or less experienced or a little bit more nervous about making investments will typically be the people who are willing to pay more for an asset that looks like it's in good condition and sort of running, managed on good rails. So you also, in between investors, have a way of selecting your buyer or playing to your buyer by bringing a poorly managed property or something that has some maintenance issues to somebody who's looking at a more turnkey property, and that there's money to be made from turning an investment grade property that's like really requires a savvy investor to an investment grade property that's for a newer investor. And so if you can also change the use in that aspect, it's a good way to create value and that by thereby make money. And so what you're trying to do is to kind of reverse engineer your exit around your ideal buyer profile. And the extent to which you have this buyer profile in mind is going to allow you to market and tailor that asset really to their liking. And that's going to make for the most easy sale process and also for getting the most amount of money out of the sale. One tip that I can give you to this best use pricing and strategy, if you don't feel like you're necessarily the best person to do that, is to collaborate with a real estate broker who's really very good at this. And I will say that, at this time in my career, I work with a broker who's really good at this, and I value his input simply because with my investment mindset, sometimes looking at it from the buyer's perspective is not the most intuitive thing that I will do. And so I like to have someone who does a high volume of sales, but who's also really good at seeing that highest use for my properties in the liquidation process, because sometimes as a more of a hard-nosed investor, I have a tendency to overlook that stuff. So if I can give you a tip, is to work in that liquidation process with someone who's really good at knowing buyer profiles and pitching to them, and a competent realtor is probably the best person to do that. Real estate fan, I hope that this content has been useful to you, and I hope that it's given you some additional insight in what is the best way to get the most money out of a successful exit. If you know anybody who is in the process of exiting or who might profit from listening to this, please go ahead and share the episode with them. You can also go ahead and take out the phone of your husband, your kids, your coworkers, your students, your teachers, whoever's around you, sign them up for the show, recommend it to them, because that helps us get the word out to more people. And of course, I want to invite you to go over to the equitybuildersclub.com website and check out all the cool stuff that we have going on for 2026. We're really preparing to allow that strategic planning phase that's so crucial at the beginning of the year to take off properly. So if you want to book a free strategy session or come join us at our next networking event, all of those details are on the equitybuildersclub.com website. As always, you can use my promo code ML5 to get $5 off your ticket to our first event of the year in January. And that ML is the acronym of Mindful Landlord, which is my book available on Amazon. You can, of course, go check that out there. There's some insights on how to invest without losing peace of mind, but also keeping an eye on your profit motive. And then, real estate fan, the last thing I want to do is to invite you to join me again, same time, same bat channel, next week for another episode of Real Escape Investing.